Hey, what's up? It's Emily, and I'm pretty sure that compassionate coordinated healthcare is something on the top of everyone's mind. That is why I love Live by Advantia Health. From primary care to mental health and gynecology to obstetrics, Live understands these are all connected and important to you. Live is a membership-based practice in the heart of DC that prioritizes your experience. Plus, Live accepts all major insurance. So take charge of your healthcare on your schedule and choose Live. Learn more and become a member by searching for Live by Advantia. L-I-V by Advantia.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus. And we have a special episode today. The return of a journalistic icon in Chicago, Joe Colley of the Chicago Sun-Times. How you doing, my friend? It's awesome to talk to you again, Joe.
I thought you were going to introduce KC for a second there with all that verbiage.
He's the Hemingway of Bulls beat writers. He's just a different style, different cat, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
We have a lot of similarities, though, too, with the notable exception of our feelings on Coach Tibbs. But, you know, overall, I think we both grew up in similar circumstances based on what I've been able to garner in terms of how we were raised and how we were played the game and taught to play the game. I've just kind of disagreed with the general, you know, idea that...
No, I got you. Trust me, there's, I coach two sports, and we go through this with some of the parents that just have a different mentality of how many times you should practice a week and you know, who should practice and how hard you should go and how many hours you should go. I mean, and that's just like middle school kid stuff. So I think it only, I will say this. People don't understand, and Joe Keane was the first to point it out, and I wasn't real sure because I didn't know Billy Donovan that much. People don't understand how closely tied together and from a philosophical standpoint, Billy Donovan and Tibbs actually are. The big difference is Tibbs never had to suck up to recruits, never had to talk to the media a certain way because he wasn't really looking to attract what mom says at home or what grandma says at home. Do they want to send their kid to your school? These guys that come from college, they approach the media a lot different. They're always recruiting still. It's kind of ingrained with them. But as far as the mentality in practice, in game, I mean, Billy said it yesterday. We basically have to do at all costs to win. And we're not going to lighten up in the regular season because I don't want bad habits to form. I mean, and both of them are really great with veterans between games, off days, no practice, mental practice, watch film. It's just that kids doesn't have a soft touch like Billy.
You would have to admit, though, there's a notable distinction in that Billy recognizes, addresses the issue, talks about it, says that...
Oh, it doesn't change it. You're 100% right. He acknowledges it. He says it concerns him. But come the next game, Isles out there for 41 minutes. So well, as much as it concerns him, he's still in the art of winning basketball games.
Okay.
And so Joe Keane even said, hey, I'm telling you right now, Tibbs and Billy have a lot of similarities. Billy's just got a way different approach to things as far as how he talks with the media. You know, Billy, away from the media, I thought he was kind of a choir boy from afar. He's got some sailor in him, too, trust me. When you're just BSing with him. And the other thing, too, Tibbs is basketball 24-7, 365, to me, completely unhealthy. And he and I have spoken about that.
Yeah.
But he also recognized that and made sure he never got married because he knew he'd get divorced. Made sure he didn't have kids. He's got his nephews, and those are basically like his kids because he knew he wouldn't have time to be a great dad. Billy is basketball 24-5. There's the difference, 325 days.
But yes.
He doesn't have hobbies. It's not like Fred Hoiberg who loved to golf and, you know, do his thing. Billy is basketball all the time, but he has a family. He's a good family man. He holds that as a priority, where Tibbs doesn't have that, but besides that, they're very, very, very similar.
I think they're very different, though, in one respect. And it's something that I've seen throughout the years of playing and coaching, too, in that there are some coaches who ask the talent to adapt to the system, and there are some coaches that adapt the system to the talent. Now, you can have success with both. Bobby Knight asked his teams to adapt to his system no matter what the talent did, and he had a tremendous amount of success. I'd argue Phil Jackson was kind of similar and demanding that you play the triangle. I'd argue Tibbs is that way. Billy is not that way. Billy will look at his talent and adapt his system to what he has. Do you disagree with that statement?
Somewhat, because there are certain habits and there are certain aspects that Billy wants from his team. Now, like last year, they got tight and they had boots, so they did a lot of high-low sets. So he adapted to playing two bigs. Okay, but I think anybody would do that. I mean, Tibbs adapted to no Derrick Rose and having Joe Keane be a point center. Joe never did that before that season when he finished fourth in MVP.
Yeah, but Joe
never did that before. Tibbs adapted his offense to fit Joe's skill set, which was being a big who could really pass the ball, especially from top of the key.
Joe will admit that a lot of that development occurred with Billy Donovan in the summer of 2012, where he saw, oh my gosh, look how these teams are attacking Derek. You need to be able to put yourself in position to punish that. And Joe talked about it in an interview, a great pod. I can't remember where I heard this, but I think it was on the Bulls Talk pod. And he stated that summer he worked with Billy. Like, I agree with you. There are a lot of similarities between Tibbs and Billy Donovan. I've never, ever questioned the knowledge or work ethic of Tom Thibodeau. My issue has always been what happened again with R.J. Barrett. It's like a fireable offense. He played two games, 40 minutes plus. What is he doing? What is he learning out on the court with 10 seconds left in a game that's already been decided, Joe? Like, even you...
I know, but if I were to take the circumstances and not put a name on it and say player A just came off a concussion, just got out of the protocol and played back-to-back 40-minute games. Player B has a sore knee, has knee swelling, played in a back-to-back, the knee swelled up again, he's got to go see a specialist. You would call those fireable offenses. So
Possibly.
So here's our big gap. Like you said, there are a lot of things we do agree on. But our big gap, and look, I've gone through some things medically that have been well documented. I have different life lessons that are in my head than a lot of people might not have. But I believe to reach greatness, to reach the top, to reach something that is important to you, there is sacrifice. Yeah. And that sacrifice may come at a big payday, may come at the number of years you could actually do. I know a lot of guys that have kind of coasted through their sport and have never really sacrificed. They were blessed with something, whether it was height or strength, like an Adam Dunn. Adam Dunn just reminds me of a guy that was blessed with the ability to every so often hit a ball 450 feet. But besides that, he'd rather just be hunting and fishing. Baseball wasn't his passion.
Right.
And so you go through a career like that, you're going to get paid. You're going to have some great seasons, maybe some all-star seasons, Pro Bowl seasons, depending on the sport. But at the end of the day, are you willing to sacrifice and do what it takes to win at all costs and win it all? And sometimes that takes a toll on your body. Sometimes you have to put your body in uncomfortable positions and in uncomfortable places to squeeze that out of you. I mean, there's guys that have given everything they've had, and that comment burned bright for 4, 5, 6 years, whether it's Earl Campbell, guys like that. They didn't question how many times they were going to get the ball. They just knew one thing, go, go, go.
Yes.
And there's a sacrifice to that. And to me, teams that are serious about winning titles, and not just one, but kind of putting that foot on someone's throat and saying, we're here to be a dynasty, there's a sacrifice that has to come with that. And so are you willing to pay that toll? Because it's a heavy toll sometimes. Are you willing to pay that toll as a player? And that's the one thing I love about DeMar DeRozan. He comes to the shoot-around willing to pay that toll. Doesn't wait for the game. I didn't know him that well in Toronto. And then he kind of went on a milk carton in San Antonio. But that was probably the best, when he talks about it now, that was probably the best thing for him, because he was out of Lowry's shadow. He was learning a different type of style of basketball. It was a perfect storm that kind of dropped him here in Chicago to give him all this knowledge and what he's done. And now he's got Toronto won it when I was gone. They did it with Kawhi. that chip has been on his shoulder and it's not coming off. And he knows there's a toll and a sacrifice where he even says, yeah, 40-some minutes back-to-back, I'll go home and ice, and I'll be ready to go. Those are the kind of dudes that, to me, belong on a pedestal.
Yes.
Because the young guys see that, everyone sees it, and you can't. A coach could do whatever he wants, say whatever he wants. When it's your best player or one of your better players saying it and doing it, it's a whole different meaning for all these young guys. So the lessons he's teaching everyone, including Zach LaVine, I don't think you could have paid. You could double his salary and it still wouldn't be worth it. More than worth it.
Well said. So you feel he's had, I mean, he's clearly had an impact with Io. The
fact
that he went to show up at his ceremony just to me said everything. That on an off day, you're going to go down to Champaign, where I went to school, and know how difficult a ride that is. And it's just not.
Yes.
It said everything to me about the guy as a leader
everything.
And a dude and just a premier good dude. Are the COVID restrictions, have they eased somewhat? Or do you feel like you're starting to know the team a little better than it was last year, where you guys really were really hindered in doing
right.
your
no,
job?
No, I feel like until after that Miami Cleveland trip where they got hit by COVID, I was the only one on that trip, and it was right before Christmas, so I shut down the travel because A, I knew I had to get my booster, otherwise I lose my tier one status, so I had to get a booster, and B, I didn't want to get sick for Christmas with the kids and stuff like that.
Right.
There was only a couple trips and there was no access anyway, so it wasn't a big deal. But I felt like on that West Coast trip that I went on, I was on the entire time. Guys were in and out. Darnell was in and out. Casey was in and out. I think he split some of it with Rob Shaker. So everybody was represented at some point on that trip. But I was all the way through. And I felt like on that West Coast trip, I got a much, you know, I've always known Zach. That's when Zach and I had that story where I talked to him about his value and is he actually worth a max. DeMar is very easy to know. Io's very easy to know. I did some stories on him early that his mom loved and wanted copies of. So, and rest of the guys, I mean, you know, Javonte I've talked to, you know, he's pretty quiet. But, no, and here's the other thing people should know. Probably one of the best locker rooms I've ever had to cover as far as guys talking to guys, their willingness to talk. You know, Lonzo Ball isn't the greatest talker, but he's pleasant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think he's grown up in a household where his dad has probably sucked so much energy out of every room they go in, where he and LaMelo are just very chill. They're as opposite from their dad as can be. And they're just very pleasant. They answer your questions. They don't say a lot, you know, so he's not like the greatest. And Caruso, unbelievable. I think to a man, we learned what he's about pretty early on in training camp for the media and the way he was going to deal with us. So, no, it's been an easy team to get to know because there's so many good guys. It's one of the better locker rooms I've had to deal with.
And that's great to hear, first of all, because I think that will definitely yield positive results for not only like in this season, but to me, the most important thing is Patrick Williams. Somebody has to get to this kid to let him know that he has the world if he just gets aggressive and decides to take it. What is your take on him? Because I think the inactivity at the trade deadline has put an immense amount of pressure on him to bring it, because our ceiling is kind of dependent on him, in my opinion. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, that's the position that even if you have someone good there, forget a second-year guy who's coming off an injury, that's the position that you have to stop on the opposing team, is that wing that kind of can do some things. You know, obviously LeBron's out of the East now, so you're not worried about that monster. Kawhi, you're not worried about that monster. George, you're not worried about that monster. But that's still a position where you need a little differently now, because you need that spot to help Vooch out, to throw minutes on the big guy to help Vooch out, just because Vooch has there's just some things defensively he's not great at. I think he's a pretty good defensive player, especially in the framework of team defense that a lot of people don't realize.
Mm-hmm.
But just on the ball, individual defense against a monster like Embiid, you would like multiple bodies to throw at a guy like that. It doesn't mean you're going to stop him, but you just want to give him different looks, different feels. You know, the fact that Alex Caruso had to be thrown on Julius Randle, and look, Randle went 5 for 7 in that first quarter against Caruso, was very efficient. But Caruso also got him to turn the ball over five times. So that tells you how disruptive he was in that. So, so I came out of summer league feeling pretty good because we saw an aggressive Patrick Williams. And, okay, he gets it. And then the start of the season, I know there's a small sample size. I saw him just revert back to just wanting to sit in the back seat, get on his iPad, be a passenger in the car. And yeah, you can't have that for the number four overall pick. And I think the thing that really, and I look, I'm not making the comparison. Even though they went to the same school, had the same exact role, you see how Scotty Barnes plays and the aggressiveness he plays with, and you're like, damn, man body at a young age, same school, same role for Florida State, similar numbers. Why the hell isn't he doing that? And I get it. It's easy to say, and they're two different people. They're two different type of players. But that's the mentality we all want to see from Patrick Williams. Can he find that still? Yes. But I think he gets so caught up in, I'm playing the game the right way, I have vets, and I'm doing right by them. Screw it, man. Go get your numbers, too. And I'm going to say doing it out of the framework of the team game, but there's a way to do it in the framework of the team game. Don't pass up shots that you should be taking. Miss or make, take them so you get that feel. So I agree with you 100%. He is key. To drop him in at the end of March, get him in a rhythm, get him reacclimated with this group, because that's basically when you drop him in, that's his training camp. That's going to be rough. So I think you are going to see a lot of different looks, Carusos, Javonte Greens, Patrick Williams thrown on these different guys, whether it's Miami or Cleveland and their bigs, or Philadelphia and what they have. You're going to kind of have to mix and match, because I don't think it could be, there's just not the right time where you can just say, Patrick Williams, go do that.
This is, to me, the whole key to this season. I was concerned, Joe, when he had that injury, and immediately the Bulls announced, oh, he's out for the year, which was insane to me. Like, when has a guy missed an entire season due to a wrist injury?
So they had to do a lot of stuff in that wrist. It was bad.
It was that bad. Okay.
It was bad. I mean, we're not talking like one ligament was torn or moved. He was pretty messed up. And, I'm not talking he's going to lose his hand and stuff, but it was bad. They had to do a lot of stuff to make sure that it heals properly and there isn't setbacks. He was immobilized from even like doing anything with the hand for like a month, 6 weeks, where you're just sitting there and not moving it was a significant injury. I don't think people, it wasn't a Caruso type fracture or anything like that. It was major. So I think the original thing is they ruled him out for the regular season. They made sure to use that verbiage regular season, hoping that there was a chance they could get him in late or get him in the postseason, in an X kind of role. And they still they're still not even sure what role he had. They said even if he comes back, it doesn't mean with the way Devontae's playing and the way you want to control his minutes, it doesn't mean he's coming back as a starter either. I mean, Billy was very clear about that a couple weeks ago.
Well, which I think that's, let's just stop right there. I think that's insane. Because, like, as nice as Javonte Green is playing, there's a lot of great stuff about what he does out there. Nobody's guarding him. Like, if you look, I don't know, every double team that's sent at DeRozan, it was definitely true against the Thunder and definitely true against the Timberwolves, has been his man. He's been unguarded. So, of course, he's going to have some really nice games. But
I don't think they're talking about his offense. There's going to be – depending on who they get the first round, you could argue there's a – especially if it's a smaller team where they could just – they feel like is guard heavy, and that's, like a Charlotte. I mean, everything goes through the guards for Charlotte.
Yeah.
If they feel like they want to disrupt those guards, Javonte's actually a good play over Patrick Williams just because – you switch on Javonte with anybody besides a true five, Javonte's going to freaking harass him, whether it's a point guard or, and Patrick's good in that too. There's some point guards that are going to do blow-bys on Patrick. Javonte's hard to blow by. If you're a point guard with great handles or a two with great handles, he's a monster. So I think that's what they're talking about. Defensively, there might be a certain matchup in that first round where they're like, now, if it's Cleveland, hell, I'd want Patrick Williams in there because it's just – you get 3 7-footers. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I definitely think it's matchup. It's going to be what's our first round matchup, first and foremost.
Okay, so let's say the Bulls enter the playoffs 100% healthy. After the All-Star break, it's going to be pretty difficult. They won, obviously, several in a row against some weak teams, but it gets a lot harder pretty quickly. Name the teams that you think the Bulls would not be favored against? Who do you think they would likely lose to in the first round? Or any round. Let's just go there.
It's the obvious ones. I mean, Miami's a tough matchup. Philly, I want to see what it looks like with this Harden thing. But Philly still has some other pieces that are a tough matchup. And yes, they got the monster in Embiid.
Agreed.
Brooklyn, I want to see what that looks like. I mean, maybe that, you know what I mean? Again, the funny thing about the East, the only one team you can look at and say, okay, they don't have Oladipo yet, but that's about it. Miami's pretty whole right now.
Yes.
Everyone else is a work in progress, including the Bulls. You know, the Bulls are going to have to get some people reacclimated as well. So, you know, I mean, those are the teams that I think are a bad. Milwaukee is not a great matchup. So, you know, I think it's the usual suspect. If I'm a Bulls fan, I'm not worried about Cleveland. As nice a story as it's been, as nice as that front line is,
too young.
I'm just not worried about it.
Yeah, they're too young.
I'm just not. They don't have the star power to close out games like the Bulls do. And so, Charlotte, not worried about them.
What about Boston?
Toronto's interesting because they are long and big, and they can throw a lot of different looks at you. They do some funky things on defense, blitzing, and but again, I haven't seen the Bulls kind of whole play Toronto where I'm like, all right, this is what it's going to look like. So, again, it's just your usual suspects: Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Philly, Miami, and three of those teams I need to see more from.
What about Boston? Won 9 out of 10. They did lose at home.
Yeah, I mean, look, but what the hell took so long? You know what I mean? Why was it looking so bad when you have two elite wing players? Why couldn't they coexist? And so, and will that rear its head where it was just my turn, your turn, my turn, your turn? Will that rear its head in the postseason? You know, I don't know. I mean, Tatum's had some big moments in the postseason, so there is a track record there. But, you know, if I'm the Bulls, I'm just not stressed about Boston. You know what I mean? To me, it's those teams I mentioned where you're like, okay, on paper, what can they become off of paper? And is that something that's a bad matchup for us?
Were you disappointed the Bulls did not make a move at the trade deadline?
Yes, because, like I just said, there's so much uncertainty in the East. You can't. The worst mistake people make in sports, especially fans, is believe that they have this window. Trust me, windows are mythical. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some great teams see some windows close very quickly in all sports, football, basketball, baseball. Oh, we're going to have a dynasty. Look at all of our young guys. I mean, hell, Chicago should understand that. The Cubs are supposed to be a dynasty when they want it. The White Sox are supposed to be a dynasty. Derrick Rose's team is supposed to be a dynasty. So this idea of windows being opened, or, hey, you know, we've got Vooch through next year and DeMar for three more years, and we're going to max Zach. So, you know, we've got this window, Lonzo, and you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, Zach could sign a max. Your Vooch leaves after next year. Zach has a major injury. You know what I mean? There's so many things that can go wrong. You know, so I if you have a chance, you go for it today, and you worry about tomorrow. And I made that comparison to the Rams of, yeah, they don't have first-round picks. They don't have anything. But you know what I know they had? They had a parade yesterday in Los Angeles.
Right.
That I know for sure they had, because they said, we're going for this now. Oh, OBJ, you're available? Oh, Von Miller, what's it going to cost us? Okay. Stafford, what? Detroit, here's all these picks. That's fine. You take off. So that kind of mentality is one I really like, because you aren't promised tomorrow. And that's just me with personal things I've gone through. Well, you just, if you got a chance to do something, you do it today.
I agreed with you when the trade deadline happened, and then as I kind of reviewed all the deals, like, what did you feel like they should have done that would have them?
You know, I see Milwaukee give up DiVincenzo for who was that for?
It was for Ibaka. I'm not giving up Kobe White for him.
Okay, but Kobe White, you may have to give up Kobe White for free. I mean, Io and Kobe could come up at the same time, and you already have maxed out Zach, maybe super max Zach. You still got DeRozan's contract. You still got Alex Caruso's contract, and you still got Lonzo's Ball contract. Now, if Jerry Reinsdorf is going to come out and say luxury tax don't matter, then I'm fine with it. Then keep Coby White. I have no problem with it. But on the history of what they've done with the luxury tax, and Jerry still has the final nod on things, I think Michael has a lot of say, and I think Michael's done a lot of great things. But at the end of the day, he even said last year, the old man has the final say, the final nod. If Jerry says, no, we're not doing that, then you may have to make a decision between Io and Coby White. Which one would you rather have right now? If you look at their ceiling of what could they become, which of those two would you rather have?
As a U of I grad, lean towards Io. But, Joe, I mean, the way that Coby White has played the last, at times this year, I mean, he just turned 22.
Because he had to, because guys were hurt. Come playoff time, Billy's not going 10, 11 deep. I hate to tell that to people.
I agree 100%. How deep do you think he's going to go?
He's always says 9. That's his thing. That's always been his comfort. So, who's the odd man out?
Javonte Green.
Might be like,
Javonte
Green. I have a feeling it might be, you know, if Kobe's got it. You know, Coby has a chance to make a lot of mistakes because they need him out there. There's been some games he's come out there and he's been terrible. Io's worst game was probably yesterday. I thought he had a bad game yesterday. That was the first game where I said he looked like a rook.
Yeah.
And it still wasn't that bad of a game. You know what I mean? But there's a lot of blow-bys by Fox. He had trouble with Fox, and that's the first time he saw him. You can watch film all you want, but until you have to go against that speed, that's a tough cover.
Agreed. So, yeah, Io is elite defensively. He is so good for his age.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
And so you don't give up a guy that I think has a chance to be a two-way player and maybe possibly an elite two-way player, especially guarding the perimeter. But, so one of those guys may have to go. And if I'm not privy to these conversations. And the other thing, too, is they were in no condition because of the Zach LaVine knee and the uncertainty there before him going to see a specialist. They were in no position. They were kind of handcuffed that they had to stick with all these guards because Caruso is a rebound in 6 to 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it's, you know, 4 weeks or 3 weeks, whatever it is. That's just a rebound. That doesn't mean he's back. Lonzo Ball is his knee. The last time the knee flared up in Los Angeles, he was out for a significant amount of time after he had a little scope surgery. So you're kind of handcuffed where you possibly, like Milwaukee, look what happened to Milwaukee. They trade DiVincenzo. They have an injury in the backcourt, and they're like, hell, we got to be going to the Dragic bidding war now because we need another backcourt guy. So, I mean, that happens, but I appreciate them saying, we don't know if we're getting Lopez back. We need another big. We need some physicality to help throw. They were thinking big picture. Who's our problem? Embiid's our problem. Bam, bam for Miami is our problem. What do? We get another body to throw at him. But we like DiVincenzo. He's a nice player. But you know what? This is about now. This is about repeating. This is about defending our championship. That's all I'm saying. Now, again, it gets back to the point. They may have been hamstrung with the injuries where they couldn't move a guard because of the uncertainty.
Right.
So maybe that was it. But I would have liked to have seen that. As aggressive as Arturis has been since last summer, why stop now? That was my thought process.
Yeah. I just feel like Coby White and Io have proven they can play together. So if that decision is going to be made, it's going to be a financial one, and shame on the Bulls for that. Because that should not be factored
in. Yeah, that's without question. Right.
So because those two guys can absolutely play together. And
absolutely.
I think Coby is probably the most underrated story. I mean, as good as DeRozan has played in these last 8 games, Coby has had some insane games in the last 5, and he deserves, you know, a shout out. He deserves to be recognized. He's been that good.
There's a reason he's made some tough shots, but he gets a lot of open shots because of DeRozan, because of Vooch. To me, Vooch is the unsung hero of this team.
Mm.
The unselfishness he's had to endure this year, and willingly, knowing it means wins, and the amount of times I see him get a pick and roll, get the mismatch on a guard, and Zach doesn't even look at him, or Coby doesn't even look at him with the mismatch. I'll say is very good as far as identifying the mismatch and understanding a post pass and where to put it, where he likes it, things like that. But Zach and Coby, there's times they get a switch and they don't even look at big man, and he just either goes, you know, to that baseline box, or he kind of flares out and just tries to go in and rebound because he knows it's going up. So to me, the unselfishness he's had to endure is the kind of the unsung story.
Yeah, well said. And I've really kind of come around on Vooch just because I saw some stat that when he was on the floor, defensive rebounding is so freaking important. And
yes,
they're like a completely different team where he's off the court, where they're one of the better defensive rebounding teams. He goes off the court, they're terrible. So right there, there's a tremendous amount of value in what he does. I'd like to get your opinion on something because I do agree with you a lot on Twitter where you're fighting with the Hinkie, Hollinger types that, you know, are so in the analytics that they got their head so far buried in the computer that they can't see the forest. What do you think about getting him more touches in the post, which I think they need to do because, number one, in the playoffs, that's going to be a staple of the offense, like it or not. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be running in the playoffs, number one. And number two, there's huge advantages about getting him involved in the offense that, you know, don't really show up in the numbers, I don't think. Do you agree or disagree?
No, well, first of all, it puts him in a better rhythm. The numbers don't always show that. Secondly, when you have a great passer, which the numbers identify, when you have a great passer, a poor man's joker, which he is to me, there aren't a lot of big guys that are willing passers like that. It's just, there's just not. And that could pop out and shoot a three, and that are 6'10 and have some girth to them, some width to them too. So he's pretty unique, and people, I think, kind of take him for granted. But without question, when he gets touches early in the post, whether he makes or misses, just the idea that he's being identified by his teammate, it just puts a different pep in his step on both ends, And he's kicked himself in games where he didn't play well defensively because he carried his offense over to his defense. So he's accountable in that department, which I like. And he even frustratingly will say, I should have been better on defense. I was hanging my head because of missed shots. And so, without question, and look, you know, I kick the analytics guys. I definitely think there's a spot for analytics in basketball. I think the analytics in football is a complete joke for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And analytics is huge in baseball. And I coach baseball and football, and I use analytics for 13, 14-year-old baseball. I was using them when they were 8, 9 because these little shits have muscle memory. They all hit the ball to the same place. And so all you got to do is a spray chart and move your defense. And guess what? Little Tommy's going to ground out to third base because I got a shift on him every time because I know what he does. And I don't care if he's 8 years old and his parents don't like it.
Right.
Too bad. So, and the analytics definitely has a place. It just can't be the end-all, be-all because it doesn't always take in the human emotion into it. And that's the flaw in it. And the more emotional your sport, football being the most emotional one, the numbers don't mean shit. And basketball, I think it's a tool. Billy Donovan said it best, it's a tool. And we use that tool, but it's not a crutch. That's the big difference. It can't be a crutch. It can be a tool. Baseball, I think it's very important in baseball. I'm not disputing that. And a lot of times I just like tweaking the analytics guys because they're so easy to get them upset exactly. Over the littlest thing. So, definitely, Vooch is key. Getting Vooch fed early, whether he scores off of it or he passes out of it or just to get him a touch, they look like a different team when they do that. I will say that. It doesn't always translate to wins or losses, but it just, Vooch looks a little different. Vooch carries himself different. I think that's important. And they've talked about that. They've identified that. Yeah, Vooch has to get some touches early. You can't ignore the man.
Two more quick questions. I can't thank you enough for being so generous with your time, Joe, today.
No
Tristan
problem.
Thompson. What's your take on this edition? Do you feel he has anything left? Do you feel he's going to help the beloved as we march towards the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's not closing out games for anybody. He's not probably going to be in there in critical moments in playoff games. But he's a guy that could get you minutes to get you to that critical point. You know what I mean? Second quarter, third quarter, get you minutes, let Vooch rest a little bit, get you some offensive boards, do some rim protection. I mean, it's not like the greatest pickup ever. It's kind of, we'll see if it's good or sneaky good. You know what I mean? So I think there's something a little bit in the tank. I think he's hungry still. I think he still has that in his mind. He needs to put his name back in the league. And a guy like that, when you come into a bunch of other dudes that have chips on their shoulder, you never know what you're going to get. He may feed off of DeRozan's chip and Zach's chip and Io's chip for being picked where he was and Javonte Green for being ignored, his chip. I mean, there's a lot of dudes that are carrying chips on this team, which is great.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, he might fit right in. We'll see.
So the last question, we're going to step outside of basketball because you mentioned Earl Campbell earlier, and I don't know if I ever mentioned this to you, but Houston Oilers were my first love. So obviously I have a great amount of respect for the Steelers of the late 70s, and my earliest right. memories are of that last Super Bowl probably. I don't know if you saw this documentary with Terry Bradshaw.
I've seen it.
You have? So I love your take on this guy. Like, what's going on with Terry? Why is it? What's your opinion, first of all? Where does he stand in football history in terms of quarterbacks? And I just like your overall viewpoint or comments on him and why he feels the way he does.
Well,
looking back on
saw the documentary, you know, the way he was raised, he was a guy that excelled better when he felt loved and when he felt wanted.
Right.
And Chuck Knoll was not. Chuck Knoll was a teacher. Chuck Knoll was a student of the game. He was not a hugger, not a lover, and not someone that's going to pat you on the back and say, "We're sticking with you, Terry." It was, "You failed to do what I needed carried out. Next guy up." I mean, look how many times Bradshaw got yanked in and out.
Early on.
Early on. And secondly, I think Terry Bradshaw was a guy that probably didn't understand who he was until later on in life, which he's talked about. I mean, wasn't he married to JoJo Starbuck, the skater?
Yeah.
I mean,
for like 10 minutes.
So, and I don't think he was a guy that was ever real comfortable in his skin. And again, I think it goes back to the way he was raised, where he came to Pittsburgh and they brought in all these guys. And I don't know if he ever felt comfortable. You know, all those guys we talked about socially, they didn't really hang out with Terry Bradshaw. He was kind of a loner. I don't know if he ever felt comfortable out of the South and in a blue-collar place like that.
Yeah.
And so
his
place in football history is, to me, is vastly underrated because, you know, I know in the top five quarterbacks he's never mentioned, but if you're going to go on the scale of greatness, four Super Bowls, four Super Bowl wins, then Joe Montana, four Super Bowls, four Super Bowl wins, he should be right up there. He had no failure whatsoever in the highest game. And look, he had an unbelievable team. Just look at the Hall of Fame. They should have their own wing.
Yes.
I get it.
Right.
But in two of those Super Bowls, Bradshaw was the best player on a field against other teams. I mean, and look at the guys he beat. He beat Fran Tarkenton. He beat Roger Staubach. He had to beat Dante Pastorini. He had to beat Kenny Anderson. He had to beat Kenny Stabler. I mean, you're talking about legends, Dan Fouts. I mean, he had to go through, you know, look at all the Hall of Famers the Cowboys have. So he'll never get his just due because it's so far back in time and in people's minds. But to me, he should be right up there in the top seven, top eight quarterbacks of all time. So just because of that perfection.
And the reason,
one for four is pretty significant.
The reason I brought it up, I just have – there's echoes of Scottie Pippen with him. Like, how do you go back, look at that? You mentioned Chuck Knoll wasn't a hugger. Who was then outside of Dick Vermeil? I mean, nobody was. That's the way coaches were back then. And
I think also Terry talked about this. Back then, if you had a mental health issue, you sucked it up.
Yes.
And I think Terry talked about all the mental health therapy and all the stuff he's had to go through later on in his life. So there was more going on there than just, oh, my coach doesn't hug me or hit me on the ass after I make a good play.
Good point.
I mean, it was a different time. And so, you know, he's had to do some work as an adult to fix his life. And so, and he has, and I applaud it. He's open about it, which is great.
Great. Joe, it's always awesome to talk to you, my friend. I really enjoyed our discussion as always. Anything you want to talk about or pub? Any articles coming out that would be of interest to the fan base?
No. Forget the fan base. Just read the Sun Times. If you judge me on Twitter, you're getting a different view of what I'm about. If you read me in the Sun Times, the place that pays me, those are more of my true feelings. Twitter is just the gotcha app that I like to gotcha on. So, I mean, I'm leaving packing today, going to All-Star, and going back home to Cleveland, get to see the folks. So it'll be a fun weekend. There's going to be a lot of guys from the 75th anniversary team, and it should be a fun weekend. I'm looking forward to it.
Safe travels, my friend. Always good to talk to you. And Yeah, like everyone who listens, don't take things so serious. It's basketball. Come on. You know, like, I mean, that's the one thing I leave when I read some of the stuff and how upset people get. It happens with me, too. You know, like, oh, you're an idiot and all this stuff.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah,
yeah,
you're an idiot.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You had a tweet, Joe, like, the worst, which I laughed heartily at, the worst basketball Twitter accounts. And you had me first, you second, and Nick Friedell third. And people were like, slacking me, oh, are you all right? And I'm like, are you freaking kidding? It's hilarious. Like, what is wrong with you? You can't tell he's joking. Everybody knows I'm brilliant. No. Everybody knows you know basketball. It's not like, it's insane that people think we take the stuff so seriously. It's not.
Are you mad tonight, Collie, because the Bulls won? Yes, I'm furious. I'm like, people don't understand. I'm trying to make deadline and go to sleep. I don't care who wins, who loses. Make my deadline so I can go to sleep and get up and play basketball in the morning with the morning guys I play with. So that emotions, you know, the one team we just talked about, the Steelers, is the only team I get emotional over. Everything else is just the job. So
exactly. You're winning. You're winning, Joe. That's all that matters in the end. If that's what you're doing and you're getting to play basketball in the morning and you have a family that loves you, you're winning the game. And everybody gets upset. Just take it easy, will ya? It's only basketball. All right, my friend. Always good to talk to you, Joe. Have safe travels, and we'll talk again soon.
Hey, what's up? It's Emily, and I'm pretty sure that compassionate, coordinated healthcare is something on the top of everyone's mind. That is why I love Live by Advantia Health. From primary care to mental health and gynecology to obstetrics, Live understands these are all connected and important to you. Live is a membership-based practice in the heart of DC that prioritizes your experience. Plus, Live accepts all major insurance. So take charge of your healthcare on your schedule and choose Live. Learn more and become a member by searching for Live by Advantia, L-I-V by Advantia.